Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Leonard Wilson, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. Leonard is a first-time guest on Fat Guys at the Movies. And, probably what you're most, well, let's just say famous for.
Okay.
Is you're one of the people who, on Saturday nights, for those who don't know in the audience, every Saturday night, a bunch of us on Twitter will pick a movie. And we will live tweet it. We'll play it. We'll start play at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we timestamp it. We talk about it. And Leonard's been... You've been doing this for years with me. It was you and Mel Valentin who really started doing it a lot with me.
Yeah, I think I jumped in. This should be my second year anniversary, I believe. Wow. This month. About 2 years ago, you live tweeted Aliens. And
yes.
I just think I had to jump in on that one. So that's where it started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course you can follow me on Twitter as Kevin Carr at Kevin Carr. You can follow Leonard. Leonard, tell everybody where they can get you on Twitter.
Oh, on Twitter I can be found as Cavatica. That's C A V A T I C A on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And yeah, he's been doing it for so long. And actually, when we traveled to New York for the late night chat room back in August with Fozzie Bear, Leonard was cool enough to actually show up. And, we hung out that night and he got caught in the rain.
Oh, lots of rain.
It was
a monsoon.
It was like a John Hughes movie, man. Standing there in the rain and I saw him. Yeah,
so. Oh, it was bad.
But I give you mad props because you showed up and that was mighty awesome of you.
And I came really close to missing it at one point. It was just that I think I got out the train and walked in the opposite direction, then realized where I was supposed to go and had to double back.
Yeah, because where we were in New York, we were in Manhattan, but if we were any farther north, we would be in the river.
Yes.
I mean, you could literally walk outside of the cafe and there's the Bronx across the river. So that's how far up we were, which makes sense. So you would think that coming off of that last subway station, the last train station, that you'd go south.
Right. You don't believe there's anything far north. You really don't.
Yeah.
But sure enough, that place was there.
Yep. So it was great. So it was nice to and Leonard, do you have anything else you want to plug that you do?
Oh,
you
yes.
do some reviews of your own.
Yeah, I do. I am one of a number of writers at a site known as Through the Shattered Lens. It can be found, the website address is unobtainium, like the mineral in Avatar, followed by the number 13. So that's unobtainium 13. Mm-hmm. There are about a good 9 or 10 writers there, who we review just about any movie we watch and, really focus really well on the Oscar season.
So, great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, and we'll be talking Oscar later in the third segment. We'll be giving our Oscar predictions and real quick analysis on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Lord knows you're going to get enough of that this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very big week.
But before we move on and talk about a couple movies, let's get through some paperwork. You can get us at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can reach us on iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network, and we'll pop right up. And you can subscribe to the show, write us an iTunes review. That'd be great if you did, just because it helps us out and it gives us a little more, prominence. And exposure. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM and like our page and subscribe to our feed through there. And you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We have an email listener question. And you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. So, Leonard.
Yes.
We have 4 movies this week.
Okay.
And only one of them have I seen.
Okay. I haven't seen any yet.
That sounds like a young adult novel, like from like something Judy Blume.
Yeah.
Only one of them I have seen.
Yeah, only seen one.
So.
Hey, God, it's me, Margaret. I saw one film.
That's my problems. Oh, and I started my lady stuff today. Anyways, that's what our Dear God, It's Me, Margaret's about. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I always thought it was just some girl who just found faith, I guess.
That's a girl going through puberty.
Oh.
So it's... It's her encountering all the things that happen. I'm being delicate because we're on the radio. I don't want to start.
Well, of course, yes.
I'm not going to do a biology lesson.
Let's
for
not.
Ask your parents.
Yeah.
It to you. But anyways, let's talk about a couple of the movies. The first two I haven't seen. But the first one is Tyler Perry's Good Deeds. It's Tyler Perry again. No fat suits this time. Oh, and I think he's a lawyer.
I can literally set my watch by Wesley. He always does the same thing, and he's always gonna do the same thing.
We're just going through a rough time right now.
Surely someone in your family who can be a caregiver to this
child. No, we don't have family.
We live in the real world.
And I don't?
No, you do not.
It's one of our corporate apartments. You can just live here as long as you need to.
This business wasn't even your dream.
You spend all this time making other people happy. You need to go and find what makes you really happy.
First of all, Leonard.
Okay.
Do you like Tyler? Are you a fan of Tyler Perry's films?
I think I like some of the early films, maybe like the Madeas, a few of them. But I think he's finally running out of things to talk about. So true. I'm noticing that he's kind of more using himself, not as the Madea thing, but just, you know, just regular stories. It's okay. I mean, I don't have a problem with him, but he really spits these movies out. I'll give him that much.
He cranks out one or two a year.
Yeah,
and
he does.
and they're always right around this time. Like his movies do very well in February.
Yeah,
I just seem to recall that it just happens to be in February, January, March, that sort of early part of the year, because they don't command the big enough audience to do like a summer release.
Right, and then February is a pretty good month. I mean, you figure you're just getting out of this really slow January, the whole slew of bad movies that happened then. Yeah. So it's a good way to pick things up, you know.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, he's put himself out of it. I remember when he did Why Did I Get Married, the first one, and everyone was like, well, is this going to work? Because he's not in a fat suit.
Wait a minute, there was a second one?
Yeah, there's two. Why Did I Get Married? 2.
Really?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. They're basically the same movie, as is all of his films. But this one is him, and I think he's been in a couple of his Madea movies where he plays not Madea, but also plays Madea. So he does dual roles at times. I think he did that in one of them. I think, what was it, the one with
The Family Reunion, I think it was.
Well, he may have done that in Family Reunion, but was the I Can Do, not I Can Do Bad All By Myself. Was that the one with what's her name?
Taraji P. Henson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he played her lawyer. Or maybe he played the lawyer of another one when Rudy from the Cosby Show was in it.
That could have been maybe the one with Idris Elba.
That could be.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I they didn't screen it for us because they never screen these movies for us. They pretty much know that Tyler Perry, his films are going to do a certain degree of success regardless of what any critic says.
Right.
He definitely has a strong fan base. I'm curious to see whether this turns into a bit like more like Daddy's Little Girls, which was a much lower performing film, or if it would be like Why Did I Get Married, which was actually a big hit, even though it didn't have Madea in it. So, but it gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us. The next one is Gone. And we're just going to play the trailer here because I think we're going to have to get out of the segment. But this one, Amanda Seyfried is afraid that people are out to get her. And they are.
This guy came back for me. He broke into my house, took my sister because I wasn't there.
Why would he come back for you?
I'm the only one that got away because I know his secret.
Last year, a hiker spots Joel covered in mud, screaming about how some guy snatched her out of bed. They were down a hole out in the woods someplace.
No! Please! He's gonna kill Molly tonight!
Jill, it's all in your head. Go home and get some sleep.
I'll sleep when he's dead.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We left you out on the Gone trailer with Amanda Seyfried. Again, they did not screen this. What's funny is they have a screening on Thursday night, but press is explicitly not invited. The last film that happened, Ghostwriter 2. So
I learned early on, like from I think it was the Avengers. The old Avengers.
The old one, the one with
not the upcoming Avengers.
Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman.
That usually when a movie is not screened, that doesn't bode well for it.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain ones that are going to be very specific. Like we talked about Tyler Perry's, any of his movies plays directly to an audience that, and it really doesn't go outside of that audience very much, but it's got a really strong base. They're going to go see it no matter what. You get horror movies are like that too, you know.
Right. Saw or something like that.
Yeah, the Saw movies, and that's also Lionsgate. Lionsgate doesn't screen a whole lot of movies.
No, they really don't.
But certain films, when they don't screen it at all, like Gone, I don't have a whole lot of faith in this. This looks like And I'm sort of borrowing this. Somebody saw this, said this on Twitter. It looks like basically some thriller from the 90s.
Oh, okay.
That they digitally put in Amanda Seyfried. I saw that on Twitter. I forget who said that. I apologize for not being able to name check whoever that was.
Wow, it sounds like that remake for the one with Camilla Bell, where she was stuck in the house. The Carol Kane remake.
Wrong
Number, maybe? Yeah. Right.
No.
No?
I don't know. I forget.
I don't know. We'll find out.
Blanking on the title of it. I don't want to waste any more time.
Go.
This one looks so... I mean, but see, here's the thing. It's a Summit movie. And here's the problem with Summit. Even though, it's owned by Lionsgate now. But pretty much, if it's not Twilight, it's not doing well.
No.
And there are some good movies that Summit released. I mean, they released The Hurt Locker. They released Source Code.
Right.
But a lot of their movies, like Man on the Ledge was okay.
Okay. Weren't they responsible for Drive Angry?
Yeah, I liked Drive Angry.
That was good.
I loved Drive Angry. That was awesome, him going full cage in that.
Yeah,
movie.
Amber Heard.
Well, yeah, that too.
Oh, Amber.
but yeah, so, this one looks like... I give Amanda Seyfried credit for doing crap, because she's got a lot of critical street cred.
Yes.
But she's doing stuff that's not necessarily going to be critically praised. So, you know, good for her. Mm-hmm. But it gets a preemptive suck. The next one that's going to get a preemptive suck is also one they didn't screen. And that's Wanderlust, in which Jennifer Aniston tries to make another movie without showing her breasts.
Oh, man. She always fails at that.
All these people live here. This is a commune.
We prefer an intentional community.
We're not a bunch of hippies sitting around playing guitar.
Welcome to the Elysium community.
It's not like we're signing a lease.
We'll give it a month.
2 weeks.
Oh, George, I like you.
I like you too, Eva.
We should make love sometime. How'd you and Linda feel about that?
This place is incredible.
I actually feel like I'm a part of something that's real.
You know, yeah, all no breasts aside for Jennifer Aniston, because there was that whole thing with Horrible Bosses. They weren't going to show it.
Right. And I saw Horrible Bosses, and I don't remember if she did.
She didn't, because it was when I think of him as Charlie from It's Always Sunny, but when he came into her office and she locked the door and she was just wearing her lab coat.
Oh, Charlie Day, yes.
Charlie Day, yeah. Whatever his character's name is. I always think of him as, like I said, I always think of him as Charlie from... But here's the thing. Are you at all interested in... Do you even know what Wanderlust is about?
No, never heard. Oh, that's the one with...
Well, Jennifer Aniston's in it. We mentioned her.
It's her, Paul Rudd, and I think her boyfriend, Justin Theroux.
Yeah.
Right? And I think they go to some type of nudist colony or something like that.
Yeah, they go to a hippie commune.
Okay. I don't see the excitement in that, but that might work.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody not too long ago about the comparing her to and Jennifer Aniston to Katherine Heigl.
Oh, no.
And I don't like either of them, so I'm like, they're both awful. I don't like either. And if they did nude scenes, I'd watch them. I mean, duh. But
I think I'd take Aniston five times over Heigl. Heigl has a bad track record. I don't trust Heigl in movies.
Well, the reason is because if you look at all the decision when after she made it big with
Grey's Anatomy,
Grey's Anatomy, but Knocked Up, which got her big in the theaters.
Oh, right, I forgot about that.
All of her movies, her co-star is somebody who's lesser of a star than she is. When she was in 27 Dresses, her romantic interest was James Marsden, who's fantastic, but a lesser, not as known. Right. You know, in The Ugly Truth, she was with
Gerard Butler.
And in this last movie, One for the Money, she was with Jason O'Mara. Yeah, you had Killers with her and Ashton Kutcher, and he's a bigger star than her. But most of the time, she's with somebody who's lesser of a star than she is.
Right.
Jennifer Aniston always trades up most of the time in her movies.
Right.
And that's why her movies do well. Bruce Almighty did well because it was a Jim Carrey movie. Just Go With It did well because it was an Adam Sandler movie. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's tends to be what it is. Here, I think she's taking a page out of the Katherine Heigl playbook. And as much as I think Paul Rudd's awesome...
Yeah, he's not really top tier. I mean, that's not like a Seth Rogen. I mean, in the whole Judd Apatow universe of things, Paul Rudd's not really all that high.
Yeah, well, Paul Rudd will be in any Judd Apatow movie that's ever made, I'm sure, because he's one of his posse. But he's right. You're right. He's not the starring lead.
Yeah, yeah.
So
That's safe for Franco and Rogan.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so Wanderlust, I have no interest in. I'm going to have to see it because I got to review it. Mm-hmm. I was requested by. It was funny because I sent an email because I do Wall Street Journal Radio Network on one of the shows, which is really actually pretty impressive.
Nice.
and I emailed the producer of the show and I said, well, I'm seeing Act of Valor and then I have to choose between Gone and Wanderlust. So which one do you want me to see? And he's like, see Wanderlust. And I'm like.
I was really hoping you'd say Gone.
I know. I was like, that means now I have to see it because I've committed myself. So, yeah, but Wanderlust gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it. One they did screen, and they screened like crazy, was Act of Valor. And this movie is about a military, it's a military action story using real Navy SEALs with real weapons and real kablooey explosions.
You don't expect your family to understand what you're doing. You just hope they'll accept it.
I'm so excited for you, man. You're going to be a good dad.
And when you get home, you hope you can pick up right where you left off.
3, 2, 1.
All clear!
Target secure!
This is a personnel recovery. Proceed to target, recover the package, and move to extract.
Target secure!
Man, I'm taking you home.
For all those who've been downrange, to us and those like us.
I am so ready for that. I am ready for that like you really don't know. I am just, I'm all sorts of excited about that.
Yeah. Well, you're a gamer, aren't you?
I'm a gamer, but my brother's also a Marine.
So oh, he is? Okay.
So it's got a more, I mean, these are Navy SEALs. It's a totally different thing, but it still has a more of a personal thing.
Does he come home and he's like, it's really cool that they're doing this, but why'd they pick the SEALs?
Yeah, he's not a big Navy fan. So I think the Marines and the Navy have some type of friction there. but overall, I am excited for it.
Well, yeah, well, that definitely makes sense. I mean, anybody who's either active duty or who has family or friends who's active duty, this is, of course, going to be of great interest to them because it's going to be the most realistic military action, high-end military action movie that you'll ever see because they actually have the real guys doing it. Now, they're not nice. Going on missions with them,
okay.
But they recreate it. And they do have this one scene, which is just incredible, with live fire.
That's got to be tricky, though. I mean, I know they're SEALs and they probably are aware of what they're doing, but to use live fire in any situation, a movie situation, that alone is enough to see if they got all that right.
Well, I mean, it's not every scene. It's this one particular scene that they were talking about because they did a little bit. They did like a minute long teaser thing with the directors before the movie started.
Okay.
Just a video thing that they did. And the scene they were talking about with real life, there's this extraction scene in the beginning.
Okay.
And there are these boats. I don't know. I'm just using the most general term.
Yeah,
they're on a choo choo, and you know, they're these boats that have these giant Gatling guns mounted on it, and they just decimate this area with real weapons. And it's real weapons, tracer bullets, and everything like that.
Nice.
And so there's no special effects. It's real
really
things
just tearing up the forest, kind of like Predator with the minigun.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, they're not like, I mean, there's like a scene where, you know, somebody gets, they're like, oh, we really blew up a school bus on this. You know, they didn't do that, or, you know, for authenticity's sake, right?
Yeah, of course. This would be real. That's going to be sweet, though. I can't imagine how that can't be sweet.
Well, the other reason I think, because you play, is it Call of Duty?
The Call of Duty is that's Activision and Infinity Ward. You play, that's Ubisoft. They do Ghost Recon.
Okay, and isn't there one? Is Mass Effect one or?
Mass Effect is more sci-fi.
Okay.
In terms of a shooter, it's usually either Call of Duty,
Modern
Ghost
Warfare.
Recon. Well, Modern Warfare is part of Call of Duty.
Okay.
And you have some of the Rainbow Six games. There are a lot of shooters out there.
Yeah. Well, playing. And the thing is, they mount cameras.
And Battlefield. Battlefield's another one. I'm sorry.
Okay. Because they have things where they do have parts of the movie where they mount cameras on, I'm assuming either on the guy's helmet or they mount it on the gun, so they've got these digital, and so you see this point of view parts of it, but they don't overdo it, and that's actually, I mean, the action's fantastic in this film. So I think that would be, because when I saw that, I immediately thought first-person shooter game.
Right, it reminded me of that part in Doom, when they actually gave you the whole first-person sequence, which actually was really kind of cool. The rest of the movie could have been better, but that first part was nice.
Yeah. You know, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Act of Valor.
Miles
hard road. 33 years of tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground. Crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We're in the middle of talking about Act of Valor, which is the one movie I have had a chance to see. And a couple things about it. First of all, because I just kind of give you the... In the last segment, I was kind of just talking about the structure of it. And you know, we were talking about the fact that it definitely is... it's something for... If you're active duty service, or you're a veteran, or if you've got a family member who's in one of the armed services. Mm-hmm. Now, it is... You know, it is the Navy SEALs, so sorry, Marines and Army Rangers. And...
No, it doesn't suck, but it's. I mean, all of the military seems kind of cool, but it would have been nice if it was a Marine one. That's just me. I'm just saying, you know.
No, that makes sense because yeah, you said your brother's in the Marine, and what's, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of torn with this movie because the way they did this is they got the go ahead to do this movie with active Navy SEALs and use the Navy SEALs to help shoot it and do some really amazing stuff with it, and like I said, use live warfare. They're really jumping out of airplanes and that right. kind of thing. I'm sure there's elements of it that have augmented special effects, and obviously in the firefight situations they're really not shooting people in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really not blowing up, you know, citizens and that sort of thing.
I would hope not.
In terrorist attacks and that kind of thing. So there is some special effects involved. But a lot of the stuff you see is kind of really from the point of view of the SEALs. So what they did is, because they're going to be having the SEALs doing this, they went ahead and had SEALs play the characters in the movie. Mm. Which, I get what they were doing. But I really think that, in a way, is its downfall. Because... the Navy SEALs are an amazing group of people, and they do stuff that I couldn't even dream of being able to do. Yeah. And I honor them and respect them, but they're not professional actors. They're professional Navy SEALs.
Right.
Just as you wouldn't want to go get Brad Pitt when you need to do a Navy SEAL mission.
Okay.
It's not the best idea to get a Navy SEAL who's probably the best acting Navy SEAL you're going to see, and then put them in a movie. And then on top of it, they have the rest of the cast. There's other characters in it that are played by actors you'd recognize. Rosalind Sanchez is in it.
Oh, nice.
You know, there's this guy who's the head of the Mayans in Sons of Anarchy.
Okay.
He shows up in it. So you have a lot of these actors. And they're good actors. They're professional movie star actors. And so the problem is and I'm not saying the Navy SEALs are bad actors. It's just they're not good actors.
That sounds a lot like Haywire in a way, where here you have someone that was like a MMA fighter suddenly acting, and while they're really good at that one thing that they do, the acting part might not be as crisp as it could be.
Well, you know, and I think, well, here's the thing. It's funny, they're both done by Relativity. I you're right when it comes to Haywire, but Gina Carano, is that how you say her name?
Gina Carano.
Mm-hmm. I liked Haywire, and I think they got away with it because her character was cold.
Oh, she was great.
Her character had no emotion and was just a badass.
Right. Oh.
Whereas in this movie, they don't just show them as SEALs doing their job, boots on the ground kind of thing. They also show them, they have their kids in it, and they have their wives in it, and they show them saying goodbye, and they have the home life. And the problem is it's... that's when their acting falls apart.
Okay, so the emotional parts, the parts where you would expect them, I guess, to be a little bit more emotional for the home front sequences, come off a little forced.
Well, I mean, it's not just the emotional parts, but just the character-driven stuff.
Right.
You know, there's a scene where they're saying goodbye. The wives are saying goodbye to the SEALs as they're heading off to the plane on the tarmac.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was fine because it was shot like a Michael Bay movie. There was no dialogue. It was just showing them and you know, yeah, they're gonna cry because they're saying goodbye to their husbands. But it's when they have to act, and it goes from being this really just amazing kick-ass action movie to then becoming like a really bad episode of Army Wives.
Oh, come on, man. I didn't want to hear that.
And the thing is, those moments are maybe 20 to 25% of the movie with that. And so you can get past those because the rest of it is really just fucking awesome. Some of the greatest action you're going to see, some of the most realistic, because it is real action, it's going to be. The story's a little bit stilted, but it works.
Okay. Well, it could be worse. It could be the actual Navy SEALs. I mean, the film Navy SEALs. Yeah.
With Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, Crazy Charlie Sheen. And, Crazy Charlie that Sheen. That Allstate guy.
And Michael Biehn. You know, I watched Navy SEALs a couple months ago. I was a little, I may have had a couple drinks before this. I couldn't tell you what it was about. Aside from it's probably about Navy SEALs.
Yeah, I've seen it a dozen times. I still don't know what it's about, really. I just like to see Charlie Sheen get all crazy and tiger-blooded and all that.
He does get a little bit tiger-blooded. He does get a little,
yeah.
Yeah. But no, I mean, so the movie is, and here's the other thing, and there's no way around this. I think in retrospect, it probably would have been more powerful to have real actors play the characters and have the supporting cast be real Navy SEALs. I think they caused a problem by making their leads the Navy SEALs. Because now when they're doing the mission stuff and they're doing briefings and they're boots on the ground and they're talking on the thing and they're dealing with what they do best, because that's just them going into SEAL mode.
Right, right.
Completely authentic.
But I think there's another movie that did something similar to that, where you had leads, but they were flanked by people who were aware of what they were doing. Maybe it was like maybe Backdraft or
Ladder 49.
Ladder 49. Or I know there was some movie that was like that, where the supporting crew were actually elements of the protective force that the main actors were playing. But yeah. I can't recall offhand which one it was.
And I think that would have been the smart way to go. But like, they have these two main characters, and they're like, one of them, his wife's pregnant, and the other one is, you know, kind of they're sort of like been brothers through this whole thing, and
right.
And just their scenes, like they have this really awesome kick ass scene, and they go and they're getting a nuclear sub, and then they have this little chit chat about their lives, and it's just, I mean, it's just like turning off a switch, and just like, I am totally not interested in this movie whatsoever.
Get back to the action, get to the gun shooting.
Yeah, and you're like, oh wait, they're jumping out of another plate. Now I'm interested. Let's go with this. But the action stuff's enough to carry it.
Right. See, now those slow parts, not to interrupt, but those slow parts would probably be where Bay would normally throw in a girl. To kind of.
Yeah, I mean, there's no big-titted girl in this movie. So I mean, there's Rosalind Sanchez, but they don't utilize her the way Michael Bay would. Let's just say that.
Well, it's not that kind of movie. I don't think I'd expect to see that.
Well, you know, here's the other thing with it is, and this is, again, this is a trap by having that you're going to fall into whenever you work this closely with, in particular, the military. Because, I mean, it's really, really hard to make any movie that's about the military without having it become a real flag waver like this,
okay,
or becoming something like Lions for Lambs. Where it's okay. That's that one with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I remember the name. I just don't think I've seen it, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
You're not missing much, because it was a shitty movie. So, it's either going to be a movie that's going to just make them look like the biggest badass heroes and most awesome guys in the world, or you're going to make them look like they're all head cases and they have all got PTSD and they all need help and war is hell and we it's really hard to strike a balance.
Yeah,
and. So this gets very flag wavy. It gets very overly patriotic, and at times it does become a commercial for the Navy SEALs. But in a way, those character driven moments are more of a commercial for the Navy SEALs, because, and that's why I say it's like Army Wives, where everybody's like too respectful.
Yeah,
and everybody's,
it walks a fine line there. It's just let's not try to offend anybody that we possibly could. Just keep it nice and even keel.
And it makes everybody look just, oh my gosh, they're just these heroic families. And not that they aren't. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying they're not heroic families, but it just lays it on really thick.
Okay.
In particular, there's a scene, for example, there's a scene where the guy who's pregnant, he has a pregnant wife, and they're on an aircraft carrier, and he's talking to her on a satellite phone. And it is a great opportunity. You could tell they shot it. Great opportunity. We're going to launch a plane. They're going to launch a plane for something, and they're on this aircraft. So let's take a shot of the plane launching, because that's production value all over the place. And so he's talking to his wife on a satellite phone, and then they cut to the wife, and she's at home, like putting together a crib.
Oh,
and I'm like, no, that's, chances are she'd be watching TV.
Well, I don't know. That is possible, but it also pulls from Transformers. Transformers was the same way. You had Josh Duhamel calling home, and his wife was doing what? His wife really wasn't doing much of anything. He just kind of had the baby ready to say, hey, hi, or something like that.
Yeah. But, But it is. Well, his are all big beer commercials. And, yeah. So this one. So I think they lay it on thick. It's a little bit predictable. The character stuff's not good. The acting's not good. But it's a neat movie to see. You know, if like I said, it just lays some things on real thick, and like they have this whole narration going on throughout. And again, it's narrated by a guy who's not bad, but he's not. It's not like having Morgan Freeman.
I was just thinking Morgan Freeman.
With his sexy stepdaughter giving him a back rub.
Like that. Or like a Sean Connery. This is the war we fight.
Yes, this is what we're doing.
This is what we're doing today.
We are Navy SEALs.
And we kick ass.
That's right. So I'm going to say that Act of Valor kind of rocks. Definitely worth seeing. Like I said, great action. And it wasn't found footage, so thank
you. Oh, that's low.
Well, no, but it's true. Could you imagine if that was found footage?
That would be hard. All that running and shaking and shooting. And it would be Cloverfield. It literally would be Cloverfield all over again.
So, wow. You know, I mean, the guy's put together one hell of a movie. I don't see any of these Navy SEALs taking the leap. It's not even like, who's the guy who's like, he's the military advisor on every movie since Platoon?
Dale Dye. He's been on a whole bunch of shows.
Yeah, he's a good actor. He just happens to be a military guy who can.
That's right. Yeah, he was in Mission Impossible. He was in Fallen Sky. Not Fallen Skies. In everything. He's been in tons of movies. I just can't recall all of them.
He's been in everything. It's like when Fred Thompson. I mean, he was a senator, so if you ever needed somebody to look like senatorial, but he could also act. He could deliver lines, and so
Die Hard, not with Vengeance. The second Die
second
Hard
one,
two.
Yeah.
That's right.
Die Harder. So yeah, in Act of Valor kind of rocks. So let's move on. Let's talk about the box office. This has been an interesting, big surprise. Were you expecting Ghost Rider to do as poorly as it did?
No. In the back of my mind, I was actually hoping for episode one to kind of climb up there, but that's just me.
I liked episode one. I will defend that movie.
But not actually, I did expect it to do really good. When the trailer first came out, a lot of people were raving about it. I think that the switch over from the original director who also did Daredevil to the Neville Dean Taylor guys was a real big step up. You know, after all the Crank movies, I figured that would have been a big reason for everyone to go run and see it. But
yeah.
I didn't expect it to turn back on them like that.
Well, I think, and I said this, in my review. I think what this showed is that Neville Dean and Taylor can make some really great movies in the Crank franchise.
Okay.
And that's about it.
Wow.
I mean, this looked like the Crank version of Ghost Rider. They just had no character. It was just all, it was random and crazy. Really? And the action, the specs were cool.
Well, that's the thing. I was expecting all the effects to be fine, but that's a given. You already have enough money given to you to give the effects. If it's like watching like Daybreakers or something like that. You know there's going to be some effects there, but where's the story? Where's the meat?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, and I remember there was a report, they were originally reporting it as a $75 million budget. And I don't know what was really going on behind the scenes. And then Sony's like, oops, no, it was really $57 million. And I'm like, are they doing damage control with this? Or did they really invert those numbers?
Probably.
In a press release. But I'm sorry, still, if you got $50 million for a movie, it better look fucking awesome.
Yeah,
because you had $50 million.
Right. Where did all that money go? I mean, heck, when Cameron did Avatar, you know where all that money went. It might not have been in the story. It might have been Fern Gully Part 2, but heck, at least it looked beautiful.
Yep. So yeah, it was one of those that I was not surprised at how poorly it did, especially with the early reviews it was getting from Butnumathon. And Safehouse came up and made the... won the weekend gross by less than $1 million over The Vow.
Wow.
Which I wasn't a big fan of Safe House, but I was probably less of a fan of The Vow.
Okay, Safe House, I don't know. That, to me, that's like watching Another Man on Fire or something. I'm not sure I like the whole Denzel as a, not really a bad guy, but I don't know. I prefer more of the hero type Denzel one. And The Vow, as much as I want to appreciate Channing Tatum, I think that he's got potential. It's just not happening just yet for him. And I saw The Eagle, I think it was, recently. And my God, what a turd. What a turd of a film.
It's because he's such a bad actor.
Oh, my gosh. He needs a few lessons. Not that I can say that I can do better than he can, but...
He weeps in The Vow. He actually cries. He's a scene where he cries. He plays guitar and cries.
Wow. I
laughed at that.
He needs something. Haywire, he was fine, but... I mean, Haywire, he got beat up. Maybe that's why it worked it out. But.
Well, and he didn't have... Again, like Gina Carano, he didn't have that much depth of emotion to the character.
Yeah, true.
And it worked. But Safe House, the thing with Safe House is I like... I think Denzel can play a villain, but part of the problem I had with Safe House is he was sort of this ambiguously gray character.
Okay.
And at least like with something like American Gangster, he was a fucking badass criminal in that movie.
That's true, right.
Whereas this one, he was like, oh, he's a criminal, but no, maybe not. Right. I mean, he's still kind of got a badass, and he's got problems, but maybe they're justified, and so...
This sounds kind of like Gene Hackman in Enemy of the State. You didn't know whether to trust him, or maybe he was good, or maybe he wasn't, or...
Maybe like Gene Hackman in Enemy of the State, you know, after you know, like years of... just living on the run.
They pushed him too far.
Yeah. So he had Safe House, The Vow, then Journey 2, and then Ghost Rider came in fourth over the 4 day. This Means War came in with $20 million. And this is the thing. I'm calling shenanigans on Hollywood. Because everyone's like, well, that was an okay debut for This Means War.
No.
I'm like,
no.
This Means War had a higher budget than Ghost Rider 2. You can't tell me that was an okay debut. It all is based on expectations. They were thinking, mid to high teens, and it made 20 over the four-day spread. That's still not that good.
No, it's not good at all. And the thing is, it had a lot getting ready to go for it. You figure you had two great leads. You had Chris Pine coming right off of Star Trek and the one with the train cars. You had Tom Hardy, who everybody's waiting for.
With Denzel.
Right, yeah. You have Tom Hardy, who everybody's waiting for in The Dark Knight Rises, and he just had Warrior. So,
and you have Reese Witherspoon, who's kind of a tried and true rom-com vet.
Yeah, so you figure with all that, they would have did just fine, but they made one mistake, and I think that was just having McG at the helm. I don't have any confidence in that guy, especially after Terminator Salvation.
They got McJiggy with it, and it did not pay off.
No.
I think this is going to sink like a stone. If it makes $20 million over a four-day weekend, that's not good. In this opening weekend. Secret World, and this is the other thing, this is why I'm calling shenanigans on the thing. You had Secret World of Arrietty was the other new release, and it made
Ghibli.
A little less than 8.7 million over the 4 day. And I saw like Nikki Fink, who's a fucking moron anyways.
Okay.
She's like, oh, that's a big bomb. I'm like, no, it's not. It's I think the highest grossing opening weekend of any Studio Ghibli release in the United States ever.
Right, which they need, because I think Disney is ready to cut ties with them.
Oh, really? Are they?
Something like that. I know that the whole Miyazaki thing, although he's had great films, wonderful films, I don't think that they've made enough for Disney as they were hoping to make. So,
Ghibli's going to continue to make movies.
I hope so.
Because Secret World of Arrietty's made like $120 million overseas.
Wow.
They're huge hits. All of his movies. And Miyazaki didn't even direct it. He just wrote it and helped conceptualize it. It was directed by somebody else.
Oh, okay.
But and I saw it. It's a beautiful film. It's gorgeous. Go see it. It's a sweet, lovable, wonderful movie. But what's interesting with it is it's also grossed. Opening weekend gross was twice what Ponyo's was,
which
was the most recent one. So I mean, there's an uptick. But the bottom line is the Ghibli movies are never going to hit a mainstream audience in America.
No. I don't think anyone in America. I would say I don't think anyone in America are ready for Ghibli films.
There's people who are, but they're very. It's the mainstream. America,
very few. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I went and saw it because on Friday my kids were off of school. I took them to go see it, and we went. They're the only kids in the audience. I think there's maybe one other kid in the audience. Most of the audience were what you'd consider maybe the art house crowd.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't an art house theater I saw it at.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. But I mean, making over $8 million on a 4 day spread, that's not bad for a Studio Ghibli movie, for a Japanese import.
Right.
You know, that's with a name like The Secret World of Arrietty.
Yeah, you wouldn't really expect it to make that much money. Whereas with something like This Means War, where you have two big leads, you kind of
three, yeah,
and hope for something to pull. You know,
and McG has a huge track record as a director too. So
where is this?
What? Well, I mean, he did the Charlie's Angels movies, and he did Terminator Salvation.
Terminator Salvation was actually worth it.
No, I'm just saying he's made money. His movies have been blockbuster movies. They've been the big budget movies.
Okay.
And even though Terminator Salvation was hardly a huge hit.
Thank you. That's all I wanted.
It didn't open with $20 million.
No, I don't think it did.
Yeah. Then the other one is to note, this is another one. Again, I'm calling shenanigans on box office reporting. And I think this is just because there's so many people have an axe to grind with George Lucas, and they're just lashing out for whatever reason. They're like, "Oh, Star Wars plummeted 55% to get, and it made just under $10 million over the 4-day spread." But I'm like, "What the hell were you expecting?"
It's Episode One all over again. If we didn't like it the first time with Jar Jar, I don't know if 3D was going to make a difference.
But even then, it's grossed domestically. It's grossed, just the 3D version has grossed just under $36 million.
But that is the one.
That's
good thing
not
about
bad.
That. Yeah, I mean, well, you figure it's this. It's granted, it is the same Phantom Menace that we know. But it's still a Star Wars movie that you can see in the theaters. And that alone is enough for a lot of people to end up going back to it.
Well, that's why it went. And I think that's why it's made $36 million. There's first-run releases that don't make that much money. And it takes probably about 20... I've heard it takes about $20 million to do a good 3D conversion on the movies. And it was Lucasfilm, so I'm sure he gave himself a break.
Right.
So he probably sunk only $10, $15 million into this movie. And it's made almost $36 million domestically. It's made over $37 million internationally. It's $70 million. I said it's going to top out at about $100 million worldwide. That's plenty for a return on investments and plenty to justify converting clones. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the 3D re-releases of all the movies, I'm just looking at the chart here. This is The Lion King made $94 million.
Okay.
Beauty and the Beast made $47 million.
Oh wow, okay.
And Star Wars made just under $36 million so far.
Right, so we can catch up.
So it's going to do at least as well as Beauty and the Beast.
Right. But then I heard something this week that it had like maybe a 70 something drop, or was it a 50?
55% drop.
55%. Okay, so then, yeah. But the thing is with Star Wars, one, you've seen the movie. You already know what you're going to get. So.
And it just came out on Blu-ray like 5 months ago.
Right. You don't necessarily have to go see it on 3D. I mean, personally, I couldn't see the 3D very well on it. I mean, I Hugo kind of messed me up for that.
Are you one of the people? There's some people, there's like a certain segment of society that have trouble resolving the 3D image.
No, I can see a 3D image. It's just that Hugo and I guess the Avatar, that system kind of, I see everything in that sort of 3D now that for some reason that's super sharp. But I don't know. I think when watching Episode One, the only time that the 3D really stood out for me was the pod race, of course, because that was really good.
The pod race was beautiful.
Yeah, pod race was really great.
It just was awesome.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. The Darth Maul fight, the whole big fight
Battle
there.
Battle of the Fates, yeah.
And maybe the very beginning, possibly. But other than that, there was a lot of conversational scenes where the 3D just kind of faded out for me.
See, I thought that actually was where it was at times the strongest. Some of those, the people talking to other people scenes and the wipes, I thought were really neat in 3D. But I know a lot of people, and I said this on the last episode, a lot of people talked about, there people were comparing it to the re-release of Star Wars: A New Hope in 1997.
Yes,
which made almost $36 million in its first weekend, and then it led the box office for like 3 weeks.
Right.
But here's the difference: Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, went up against three other big movies, opening in 3,000 theaters or more each, And two of them ended up making $40 million. Mm-hmm. So these were in-demand movies. So it had a lot of competition. When Star Wars Special Edition was released, the highest one was Meet Wally Sparks in 1,500 theaters, Gridlocked in 740 theaters, and Shadow Conspiracy in 837 theaters. And that was its biggest competition.
Wow.
And it was also, so it was in the January where there's nothing else opening.
Right.
And that's and it's the weekend before it, coming off of that, it was coming off of Jerry Maguire in like it, which led the weekend that weekend.
Okay.
It was on like the seventh week of Jerry Maguire.
Wait, I thought that the re-releases were all done in May. I thought they were doing the whole, open everything in May like they usually do.
No. The re-releases of the first three Star Wars movies were in January through February.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They did them like every month, every couple weeks. But that's the whole thing. Star Wars came out in a complete dead time in 1997. Episode 1 re-release came out not just 5 months after the Blu-ray dropped, but in a flooded... And then it was also going up against other movies that were doing well, like Chronicle and The Gray.
Yeah. Oh, I love The Gray. Oh, wow.
That were going for the same audience. Uh-huh. So I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison. I think the amount of money he's made on this is still justifies doing...
Yeah, he'll still make money. I mean, he won't give us a 7, 8, or 9, but, you know, he'll still make money.
Why the hell would he? Because everyone's just going to bitch. If he did him, they'd be
bitch. It would. It's too far gone now.
I still like George. I like the movies.
I can watch them. They're definitely watchable. I think that 1, 2, and 3 make me long more for 4, 5, and 6 for the most part. And I think of the three, the first three, I think 3 is my favorite. I think he finally decided to go a little dark with that one, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, he did. And I mean, there's flaws in him, too, but... And I think I said this on the last time. The most telling point is my son, who was 10, we were watching The Phantom Menace. In the middle of it, he leans over to me, and he goes, "I really like Jar Jar."
one out of a million.
He's 10! Every 10-year-old fucking loved Jar Jar.
Right.
And the people... There's a whole generation of people that saw Phantom Menace when they were like a kid, like a 10 or 11 or younger, and they're going to still have an affinity for Phantom Menace. Because I went back and watched the old Star Wars movies, and there's stuff in there that was... I'm looking at going, yeah, I can see where critics kind of panned this.
That's true,
but
yeah.
It's still beautiful.
But I always liked Jawas. I always thought Jawas were cool.
Oh, yeah. Hootiki!
Yeah, Hootiki!
All right. So what do you think's going to win this weekend?
Let's see here. This weekend... I think it probably would be Act of Valor. I think a lot of people are just going to run out to see that. I think the only ones that are going to see Wonderless are maybe fans of Your Highness.
If you like Your Highness, you'll love Wonderless.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderlust has this feel that it's kind of like, because it's Universal, and Universal has struggled the last couple of years. And it's almost like they've recently at least had a couple hits.
Okay.
But Universal is coming. It's sort of like they're like, "Oh, you thought we couldn't make shitty movies like we did a couple years ago?
Oh, like the Wolfman?
Yes, we can."
Actually, I like the Wolfman.
I thought the Wolfman was.
I have it on Blu-ray actually.
Yeah, it's not great, but it's
it's tolerable. And I don't think Gone. I don't know where. I don't think Gone is going to go anywhere.
Gone is going to get buried.
Yeah,
it's totally going to be Act of Valor. It's going to be like $35 million for Act of
Valor.
It
probably will be. And Tyler Perry's got a locked audience anyway, so it's going to work. Tyler Perry will probably... I would see that coming in second, maybe, out of that, but it's definitely going to be Act of Valor this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be Act of Valor. I think Tyler Perry... I just don't see... I'm not like exactly plugged into... you know, the African-American gospel community.
Yeah, neither am I, and I am African-American, so.
Yeah, but so I don't have a finger on the pulse of necessarily what everyone's going to think about this, but I just don't feel it being, I think it's going to have trouble even with his audience, is going to have trouble not being a Madea.
Right,
movie.
Right. I think a lot of people have gotten so used to the whole Madea thing. Not to say that the Why Did I Get Married?
Yeah.
Wasn't as good, but it's everyone's used to that, so it's kind of like watching Martin Lawrence and the whole Big Mama thing. If he did anything other than that right now, I think people would be a little confused.
Yeah,
you know, that's just my thought. It could work. You can definitely have a good weekend, but I'm not sure if the audience will be running to the theater as much as they would for some of his other stuff.
Yeah, and honestly, most of his movies end up making $60 million-ish.
Yeah, he does really well.
He does well enough, but I mean, it's because he makes them on... If he made them for $50 million, they'd be bombs, but he makes them on a very limited budget.
Exactly, right.
But I think this is going to be on the low end. This is going to be like for... It's going to be on the around, like I said, Daddy's Little Girls and Four Colored Girls.
Right.
And those movies, which tend to be more serious and less of the... Because most of his other movies
are comedic. With the Madea movies, a lot of funny ones. Yeah.
Well, the Madea movies have that. They have that comedic Madea parts,
right?
Crammed in with this incredibly heavy melodrama.
Yeah.
And a very much that very Christian gospel play kind of melodrama. So you get that balance. They can be a laugh out loud comedy. And he actually smooths that out a little bit in the Why Did I Get Married movies.
Right. But this one seems really serious, though. This one seems like there's a lot of seriousness in it. It won't have that sense of Madea joking or anything like that. Yeah. It'll be heavy-handed, I imagine.
Yeah, I hope it's probably not going to be as heavy-handed as For Colored Girls. Did you use it for Colored Girls?
I don't think I did.
Oh, it was heavy and really? Drippy and well, because it's based on a play. It wasn't his.
Oh, okay. So he was working. Wow, I never knew he did anyone else's material. I usually thought that he just worked his own stuff and kind of went with that.
That's the only one I think that he didn't write, and it was much more of an Oscar grab.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. So I think Act of Valor and Tyler Perry's Good Deeds will do okay, and then I think Wanderlust and Gone are going to be in there, and then I think. Finally, everything is going to sink down. Everything is going to just have their standard drop off. Mm-hmm. Let's move on. We got a listener question. This comes from Thomas from Seattle. And it's from an email. Let me just go ahead and read it. He goes, since you are plugged into the film blogger community, can you explain why those people flock to some social media and not other social media? I'm asking this because it seems like none of the community has flocked to Google+. Are film bloggers more Apple than Android? You're less plugged in. What do you think?
Well, I've used Google Plus, and I think I kind of championed for it in the beginning. It had a lot of good things going for it, but I don't use it that much anymore. I really don't. I might write a review and then put my review on Google Plus, and it's got a lot going for it. But in a world where you already have everything you already need, like in Facebook. And Twitter, and maybe Tumblr for that sense.
Yeah,
I don't think you really need another social media thing going out there. Entertainment-wise, while it's easy to really use, I mean, it's very simple to use for blogging and that sort. Yeah. I don't know. I think that there already are enough social media elements established that you really don't need another one to join the fray. I wish Google Plus all the luck in the world, but I just don't see it getting as much of a foothold as it should.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I know a lot of people who do use Google+.
Okay.
But it's a fringe group.
Yeah, it's a very small, it's almost like Apple back in the 80s. It's just a small little group just saying, hey, we think different, we love it. Mind you, I'm doing this from a Mac myself. I love Macs, right now they are the little Apple guys compared to everyone else's IBM PC world.
Yeah, they're what Apple was before the iPod showed up.
Exactly, right. That's all they need. They just need an iPod to
Yeah, I actually will say, Thomas, that I disagree that the blogger community does not flock to I see the film blogging community flock to pretty much every social media option available. It's just that the internet blogger community, the film blogger community, is a very small slice of the pie for the entire internet. So even if every single film blogger jumped onto Google Chrome or Google Plus, it's not even going to make a difference because there's so few people in that community compared to what it takes to really launch a social media platform. Yeah, every time I hear of a new social media thing, which what's the new one now? What's the thing? It's the movie thing. It's a list type thing. It's like
you have Glue.
Get Glue.
And there's also Mubi. Mubi is like Glue, but that's for aficionados. That's for serious Hitchcock watchers and stuff like that.
No, there's another one and everyone was getting everybody was getting invites to it.
Really?
And it was something I don't know what it is. I don't care. But it was kind of like when they used to have. It's like Listomania? No, I don't know. It's something where people will make lists, but you have to and you rank your films. Now, of course. They're going out, but it's not breaking out. Here's the difference. I don't know anybody in the film blogger community who's really gives a shit about Pinterest.
Oh.
But Pinterest is going crazy. Why? Because it appeals to housewives and average people who like to come home and connect with their friends. The film blogger community isn't pushing social media.
No.
They're capitalizing on what gets out there.
Right. And the thing about Pinterest is that it really, all Pinterest really is just a... tangent of what Tumblr is right now. Tumblr is, is one of the social media ones where you throw out pictures, you throw out videos, you throw out whatever have you. And Pinterest has been around for a while. It's been around for quite a while, but I think in the last week or two, it just kind of exploded for some reason. But I don't see how the movie industry can even use that, really.
Pinterest is so it's so tangential.
Yeah, it's weird. Someone post a picture of Bane and say, "Hey, look, you know, viral marketing." I don't quite see how that works.
My wife's into Pinterest. I don't care. I don't have any interest in Pinterest.
I have a Pinterest account, but I think I've only used it maybe once or twice. I like it, but I haven't found out what to use it for. So.
And the reasoning for Google Plus is general. Even though the film blogger community is on there, it's more important to be on Facebook. And here's why. And this is the ultimate downfall in Google Plus, because Google Plus was brought out as an alternative to Facebook. The problem is everybody's already built their Facebook page and built their friends list. You cannot just import that over.
No, you can't.
So you have to then go through the whole process of inviting friends and getting friends to get an account and blah, blah, blah. It's just that, you know what? Facebook got there, it got a hold, and just the structure of Facebook, you can duplicate everything in Facebook, you just can't import all that information over.
Right. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They're already here.
They're already, yeah.
It's War of the Worlds, actually. That's that tagline. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's living there under the ground. So I think, yes, the film blogger community, they most anybody in any blogger community is savvy enough who'd be considered an editor or somebody who runs a site. If they're good at running the site, they're going to try all the new social media because they have to keep up on that because that's their bread and butter. It's just that these ones in general aren't catching on, you know, and they get general blips. Now the question, Apple or Android? I'd say Apple. Now I know you have an Apple.
Yes.
You have an iPhone.
Yes, I do.
I've seen you use it.
Yes.
And I've got an iPhone. I know a lot of people have iPhones. I think that there is just generally a... especially for blogging based movie sort of nerds and the geek culture, the first step was Apple, and mainly because a lot of these people are very techno savvy, so they're going to go for the first thing that's on the market. And even though there were Blackberries available, the iPhone was a huge step up from the Blackberry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of them went to the iPhone just because it was first to market. And why change your service if you don't care? And there's other people using Androids. Androids have kind of come up on the market, which, unlike Google Chrome, you can just import all your contacts. You can switch carriers, go to Android and switch all your contacts and download apps again and that kind of thing.
Right.
So, what do you think?
I've seen Android at work and I like it. I do like the concept of it, but I've been with Apple for so long, I really can't imagine not using anything else, really.
Yeah, the thing that gets people to switch is if they're unhappy with something.
Usually.
And then and it's just funny because it goes to the Facebook versus Google Plus thing. If first of all, they have to be unhappy with it.
Right.
And then they have to be able to switch. Because I knew a lot of people before you could port numbers over, you know, like 15 years ago,
uh-huh,
when people had a cell phone, but if you switched carriers, you had to change your number. That just kept people, a lot of people just wouldn't change their carrier unless they
absolutely just because of the fact they couldn't change their number.
Yeah. And once you were able to port numbers, then suddenly people would start switching because they didn't have to get a brand new number and they didn't have to have everybody's contact wouldn't have to change.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your answer, Thomas. Hopefully that did it all for you. Next, we're going to talk a little bit about Oscar predictions. We're going to do this relatively quickly. We're going to skip the Fat Guy 5. We're going to talk Oscar prediction. This would maybe be the Fat Guy 6 because it's always the big 6.
Okay.
Let's do the big 6 in kind of reverse order because, of course, the Oscars are this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that this is happening.
Yeah, some little award show.
Let's start with the best actress in a supporting role.
Okay.
You have, and I'm just going to say, the girl from The Artist. Because I don't want to pronounce her name. Bernice Bejo or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's Bernice Bejo or something like that.
Bernice.
I don't want to hurt that.
Jessica Chastain? Did you say you don't want to hurt that? You don't want to hit that?
No, hit's a different matter. Yeah. Hurt, I said.
Is that an option? There's also Jessica Chastain from The Help, Melissa McCarthy for Bridesmaids, Janet Gautier for Albert Nobbs, and Octavia Spencer for The Help. I heard a little bit of a noise there. Was that you cheering for Melissa McCarthy?
Yeah, I saw Bridesmaids. She's, I don't know, just something about her. Just seeing someone, anyone who can make me laugh is just, they get kudos in my book.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I guess the two questions are, who do you think is going to win? Who do you think should win?
Okay, I personally think that more likely it seems that, I wouldn't mind if Melissa McCarthy won, but she's just kind of there to round out the list. Mm-hmm. So something tells me that it would be cool if Bernice won it for the artist. I haven't quite seen the artist, but from what I've seen of it, it seems like she might be interesting for it to win. Yeah. But it looks like everything's going to be going to either Octavia. She probably will be the one to get it. Or if not her, then probably Jessica Chastain.
Yeah. I think that if Jessica Chastain had been nominated for any of the other films she did.
Okay. And she did quite a few, didn't she?
Oh, she did like six. I mean, there was The Help. There was Texas Killing Fields. There was The Tree of Life. There was Coriolanus. Wow. There was... there's a lot of stuff, and I'm missing.
She had like a Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, Take Shelter too. Okay. If she got nominated for almost anything else, I think she'd have a better shot. I think The Help.
What is she in the one with a lot of M's in it?
No, that was Elizabeth Olsen.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, the other Olsen, right?
But no, I think Jessica Chastain. Anything else? But The Help was not her strongest role. Okay. First off, and if somebody's going to win for The Help, it's going to be Octavia Spencer. I think Octavia Spencer's going to get it.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I really do. And I hope that they show for an Oscar clip. I would love them. And I think she would probably get a kick out of this because she seems like she has a really good sense of humor. If they use that clip, somebody would just splice in the clip from Bad Santa where she's like, well, last time I saw him, I didn't shit right for a week. That would be the best. And then they can like pair it up with her, the eat shit.
That, if only the Oscars would be willing to do that.
If only the Oscars let me edit it and then didn't check before.
is this all cleared out? Oh, yeah, it's fine. It's ready.
Yeah, no, just play it. No, it's fine. No, it's not a problem at all. Live TV to a billion people. Go ahead.
Nice. The Tyler Durden cut.
Yeah, I mean, I think she deserves it, too. That's one of the few people out there that I'm like, no, I think she should win, too. Because she's been around. And she's paid her dues, and she was fantastic in The Help. So
I haven't seen it, but I've heard lots of great things about it.
Yep,
got so much buzz.
Let's move on to the best supporting actor. You got Kenneth Branagh for My Week with Marilyn, Jonah Hill for Moneyball, Nick Nolte for Warrior, Christopher Plummer for Beginners, and Max von Sydow for Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Who do you think is going to win? Who do you think should win?
Hard because of Plummer and Sydow. I mean, damn. I mean, the two of them together. I mean, you should just give an honorary Oscar to one and give the real Oscar to the other. I don't think Jonah Hill really has a chance. I mean, I like Moneyball. I like him in it, but he'll have other times, and that was, you know.
I don't know if he'll have other times, but he's got a couple more years acting ahead of him, at least.
Kenneth Branagh.
That was the one. You know, there's usually the what the hell, huh? moment in the Oscar nomination. It was a Jonah Hill. You're like, Jonah Hill. I kept expecting whoever Jennifer Lawrence was reading, and she's like, the nominees are Kenneth Branagh, Jonah Hill. What?
For me, that one moment was the extremely close. The
loud and incredibly close.
Yeah, extremely loud and incredibly close. That was my wait a minute, how did that get in there?
They pushed it hard. They pushed it hard.
Yeah, they did. But for this one, I think Christopher Plummer has it. I really think he might have that one. I don't know about Nick Nolte. It's possible that he does, but I think it's going to come down between Plummer and Sydow.
Yeah, I think it's one of those that, of the people on this list, I have a soft spot for Kenneth Branagh's performance in my Week with Marilyn, but I don't necessarily think it's the best on the list.
Okay.
Christopher Plummer, look, if Max von Sydow wasn't on the list, it would be a lock for Christopher Plummer for two reasons. First of all, he's 185 years old.
Yeah.
And so you usually can vote, they're doing this is the old guy for the best supporting actors. Always actress and actress best supporting is either really old or really young.
Right.
And so Christopher, but Max von Sydow's old too, but there's the added thing that Christopher Plummer, a lot of times if you have some sort of social significance to the role.
That's true. He was a Klingon once.
Yeah. Well, in the story, I don't know if the Klingon factor is going to going to work it as much. But it's the whole thing that he plays a guy who comes out of the closet of being gay in the 70s or something like that. The character was. So there's always you know, there's a social significance attached to it.
Yes.
Which there isn't with Max von Sydow's role.
Right, because Ming just wasn't as good.
Ming versus, what was the guy? I don't know, the Klingon guy, the bald Klingon guy.
Chang.
Chang, yeah, that's right, yes. Nothing racist about that.
Yeah.
What?
Wow.
No, but I think Chris, not only do I think Christopher Plummer deserves it because he does a great job in it, I think he's definitely going to win that.
Yeah, he'll probably get that one.
Okay, let's move on to best actress in a leading role. Excuse me. You've got Glenn Close for Albert Nobbs, Viola Davis for The Help, Rooney Mara for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Meryl Streep for The Iron Lady, and Michelle Williams for My Week with Marilyn. Who do you think's going to win? Who do you think should win?
Okay, I think that Viola Davis is going to win. Mm. Yeah, I think that she should win. I mean, Michelle Williams, she's been here before. I think she'll end up being here again at some other time. Yeah. Glenn Close, that was Albert Nobbs. I never even heard of it. And not for nothing, this isn't the first time where she's played like a guy, you know, that she didn't hook.
She's played a mannish character before.
Yeah, she's played a mannish character before, so that's not new for Glenn Close.
This is not new territory.
While I give Rooney Mara a lot of credit for playing Lisbeth Salander, in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and that whole rape scene was just ugh. It was already done before in Sweden, so I don't see how you're giving someone credit for something that was already done better a year or so ago.
If you're going to get an award for rape, it better be the first time you've done it.
Exactly. No, sorry. Don't do that. No. That was done before. And then it's Meryl. My God. If she didn't win for The Hours, I mean, it might be about time that she does get it, but all the buzz has been in Viola's favor, so it seems like it might be her time.
See, I think, you know, what's funny is on this list, there are two of the actresses that I don't particularly like. I'm not a big fan of Viola Davis and or Michelle Williams. I don't like either of them.
Okay.
Part of it is, I think Michelle Williams has kind of ridden the whole, I'm a widow. she's ridden that train a little too long.
That a little bit.
And I've never been all that jazzed by her acting. Okay. I always felt that she just sort of like stands there and just kind of looks to the side, kind of thing in her movies.
Yeah.
Viola Davis, I think that there's a lot of, I think Viola Davis could do a lot, but I don't think she ever does. She doesn't stretch. I think she plays,
I don't know,
essentially the same character in every movie.
I'm not sure. I mean, okay, granted, she's not like an Alfre Woodard or anything like that, but she's pretty, I think she's got a lot of strength, you know, in front of the camera.
She can play stoic and wise. She can do that.
But then again, she has the same problem that Angela Bassett kind of has. Angela Bassett, no matter what she does, has always got some kind of strength in front of the camera. It's just one of those things where she's doing
the big difference is I totally bang Angela Bassett. Viola Davis, I might have to have a couple drinks. Although, you know what's so funny is actually you look at her on these red carpet things, she looks beautiful.
She looks great. She looks fantastic.
They always kind of dull her down. And,
then you kind of have to fix the lens, you know, kind of glaze it a bit. But I think that it could be one of those, it could end up being like a Training Day kind of thing where Denzel had all those great roles like Glory and lots of other things that he's done, but he won it for something playing a character that you really didn't kind of think that you'd see him play, you know?
It's not his most well-known character.
And they just kind of gave him the Oscar because, well, okay, he's Denzel. It's about time.
It was his time, yeah. I mean,
right,
it was his time.
This, the same thing might happen with Viola here. That's what I'm thinking.
That's why I think that Meryl Streep's going to win, because even though she's won it before, she's won it twice for Best Supporting, she's won it once for Best Actress. She hasn't won, the Best Actress was for Sophie's Choice, which is more than 30 years ago.
Okay.
She's been nominated. This is her 17th nomination for acting. She's only won 3 times. That's not great odds for her.
Right, very Steve Lucci-like.
It's been like since the Best Supporting. I forget what her last Best Supporting actress win was, but again, it was like early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and I think that that's the one role to me. That's the Colin Firth role for her this year. And that's the only thing that the Iron Lady's being nominated for is for her acting. She does a great job in it. Personally, I think Rooney Mara should win for the Dragon Tattoo because even though it's been done before, I thought if you talk full transformation roles.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, in that sense,
I think that, if you talk about the work she put into it,
she put a lot of work. And I think I'm not a big fan of Rooney Mara. My thing with Rooney Mara is more personal. It's just one of those things where she comes from a big football family. So there might've been a lot of luck in her getting the role, but I have to admit that she did a lot of work doing the role, you know.
Well, so, you know what's funny is they've changed her Wikipedia picture, but her Wikipedia picture was like used to be like when she was like 17. She's like, "Hi," and I like took I screen grabbed it, I put it up on Twitter, and I'm like, "She's getting raped and dragged out." Go yeah. check it out.
That's what I'm telling you. She's all grown up now, and just like,
But I mean, I think she really, really does, and it was a monumentous thing to overcome to play that role.
Yeah,
I thought she did a fantastic job doing it.
So she deserves credit for that. She really does. I'm not sure if an Oscar is that exact credit to give, but if it's the only thing that's being offered, hey, why not?
But this is why I think both Viola Davis and Rooney Mara aren't going to win, is because even though Viola Davis is much older than Rooney Mara, in terms of her being on the scene as an actor, that people know who she is. It's been a short time. I mean, she really kind of came on. She kind of hit prominence with Doubt.
Okay. Oh, and, that's right. I forgot about Doubt.
Yeah, which is only a couple of years ago. So she's been. Whereas, like I said, Meryl has been around. She's been doing movies since.
Yeah, she's been doing movies for a long time. That's the thing. I think that Academy in these cases will usually say most of these other nominees will be around somewhere in the future that we can nominate them and they can get a win. You know,
that's totally why Michael Caine got his Best Supporting Actor award.
That's true. He nullified who? He nullified the little kid from Sixth
A lot
Sense.
Of people, a lot of people said Haley Joel Osment should have won. I think he should have too, because I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, between him and Michael Clark Duncan, they both nullified each other because heck, Michael Caine was there. He was a good, solid choice, and that's how that worked out. And you have a point. They could give it to Meryl just because of that the other ones will eventually be back on that podium again to have a chance to win. Look at Kate Winslet. Kate Winslet's been nominated tons of times. And it just hit a situation last year.
She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress and Best Supporting Actor in the same year.
Yeah, that's sad. How do you get nominated for both of those and never get either one?
No, I think didn't she win Best Actress?
She won Best Actress for The Reader. And I don't remember what year that was.
But she was also Best Supporting Actress nominee for Revolutionary Road. Which
Although
I would have loved to have seen her get both. That would have been hilarious.
That would have been nice. The anti-Titanic.
Yeah. The next category, the best supporting actor in her leading role.
Best supporting actor.
You got Damien Bichir, I think is how you say it, from A Better Life.
Right.
George Clooney for The Descendants. Jean Dujardin for The Artist. I think I got that right.
Yeah, you did.
Gary Oldman for Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy, and Brad Pitt for Moneyball.
Right. This is best actor, by the way. You said best supporting.
Is that what I said? Oh, did I say supporting?
I think
Okay, who do you think's going to win? Who do you think should?
Okay, I like Brad Pitt in Moneyball. I really did. I want Gary Oldman to get it. I think it's high time that he needs to get some recognition. I really do. Because Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, he wasn't given a whole lot to work with. His character is really quiet, subdued. But as a former agent, you know, as an agent kind of that they bring in to do this investigation, his presence on screen is just really phenomenal. I mean, that guy just walks in, says something, and that's, you know, people listen.
It's all presence, and there's a lot of stuff going on internally.
Right.
And I agree with you. I think he should win.
That's really
I've had to think a lot about this. This is the hardest category where I'm like, who would I, if I had to pick, that's who I think should win.
Right. Now, I don't know much about Bashir. Though. Yeah, I don't know much about Bashir. Jean Dujardin. I mean, that's The Artist. I mean, everyone's loving that movie, so that probably will get it just because of that. I haven't seen The Artist, but I imagine that for him to have won so much so far, he must have been doing something right. Yeah. But with the way the Academy tends to see things, which is, they like those round pegs, round holes kind of movies.
Yeah.
I think that George Clooney's going to lock it simply because The Descendants, it's a safe film. The Descendants, to kind of paraphrase what one of the writers at the Shattered Lens mentioned, it's a safe movie. It's a movie that kind of, they don't have to worry about it being risky. It fits a quote. It's like watching Ordinary People. You know, the guy is going to lose his wife and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Clooney emotes as best as he can, even though he always will carry the shame of Batman, you know. But he does his best, and it might be enough for him to get an Oscar. So
I think, well, he's won an Oscar for Best Supporting for Syriana, and he's been nominated before, I think two other times. I agree. I think he's going to win. because the Academy loves him, Hollywood loves him, the press loves him, and of all the competing actors, there's not that like one who's going to trounce him.
Right.
I think Jean Dujardin.
Yeah, Dujardin.
I don't think he's going to. He's picked up a lot of awards, but he's new.
He's new, and that's right. And
they don't hand out leading role. That's the same reason why I think Bashir's not going to win. They don't hand out best actor or actress not Oscars for somebody who's the first. It's rare for them to get
rare, unless you're like an Anna Paquin or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but even then, that was supporting. You get the young and the old getting the supporting actor roles, but the actress and actor in general historically tend to be the safe bet, the one who's been around long enough and had multiple nominations.
Right.
So let's move on to best directing.
Best directing. Oh,
this
man,
I think is going to be interesting. That's Woody interesting. Allen for Midnight in Paris.
Oh.
Michael, what's his name for The Artist? Terrence Malick for The Tree of Life. Alexander Payne for The Descendants, or Martin Scorsese for Hugo. Who do you think will win? Who do you think should?
Well, I'm saying this just so I can try to say it. Hanzanavicius, wow, that's a name.
Wow,
he's got a good chance. I mean, the it's very rare that you can get a movie that's not only black and white but silent in this day and age, and to pull it off so well. I mean, The Artists have something going for it. The Descendants, I love The Descendants. I truly love The Descendants. I thought it was a really, you know, well made film. You know, I liked Clooney. I thought that the girl, Shailene Woodley, I think she really missed out on getting an Oscar nom, or any kind of nom for that matter. I don't like Terrence Malick. I really don't. He bores me. I'm sorry. I think I fall asleep in the Thin Red Line. It's just, I've heard great things about the Tree of Life, but it doesn't quite hold my interest.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Midnight in Paris. I've heard good things about it. Woody Allen is pretty good. I do like a lot of his movies, and he might have a good chance there. But for me personally, Hugo is the one I'm definitely going for. I mean,
Well, for directing, this is directing.
Yeah, right? For directing. So I'm thinking that Scorsese probably has a lock on that one.
See, yeah. I think that this is going to be a possibility for a split this year.
Really?
I think there's a chance that Woody Allen could win, but I think he's just going to win the best Oscar for adapted screenplay, and they're going to be done with that.
Okay.
I think of these five, I think Scorsese should win.
Okay.
I think he's got a good chance. But I also think Malick might get a good chance, because they want to show some love for Malick, but that's not going to win Best Picture.
Oh, okay.
I really don't think the guy for The Artist, I think it's kind of comes out of nowhere. But then again, I mean, it could be like last year with Tom Hooper. Is it Tom Hooper who won for King's Speech? This is the one that I think's the most up in the air. We only got a couple minutes left in this segment, so let's move ahead to Best Picture. Which one do you think is going to be? The Artist, Descendants, Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close, The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, Tree of Life, or War Horse?
Okay, I want Hugo. I think I don't see War Horse getting it. I think that probably The Artist will be the one to get it.
Okay. So. I think The Artist is the one to beat, but I think there might be a slight backlash. It all depends on how quickly people send in their ballot. And I've heard from some sources that there's a lot of people have been voting for The Help.
Really? Wow.
So if The Artist doesn't win, I think The Help's going to get it.
Oh, wow. But you never know. The Descendants might kind of sneak in there somewhere.
I don't see that getting Best Picture.
I don't think it should, really. I don't know about Best Picture. I mean, I liked it, but I don't know about Best Picture. But
I just don't think it happened. Of me, personally, I think Hugo should win.
Yeah.
But I really think it's going to be, I don't know, the safe bet is The Artist, but if I were actually going to put money on it, I'd probably put The Help.
Yeah, The Help is good.
As what I think will get the Best
Picture.
We'll get it. Mm-hmm. But if you notice, the guy who directed, or Taylor did not get a Best Director, but that's because he's a first-time director and he's not a Hollywood guy.
Oh, right. So he'll show up some other time, maybe in the future. Yeah.
So I think that's where I think you might see a split. I wouldn't be surprised if The Help gets Best Picture, and then like Scorsese or Malick walks away with if The Artist doesn't get Best Picture, it's not going to get Best Director.
Oh wow, okay,
flat out, I'll say that for sure.
Wow, it's not going to be like a Saving Private Ryan. You know, Saving Private Ryan wins Best Director, but Shakespeare in Love wins Best Picture.
Well, you could have it split, but The Artist, if it doesn't win Best Picture, it's not going to win Best Director.
Wow. Okay.
Bottom line, my opinion. All right. We got to go to a break with that. And when we come back, we'll do DVDs.
Ah, okay. Okay, and welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. This is Leonard Wilson, along with our host, Kevin Carr.
Yay!
And today, this segment...
If you missed us, if you are on the radio and you want to go back and listen to us online, we actually don't get crazy or offensive in the middle segment. I know what happened. What happened was we were talking about the Oscars. We talked a little bit more about Act of Valor, and we had a listener feedback question. We talked about box office predictions and talked a little bit about what's going on with box office reporting and that sort of thing.
Right.
And then, of course, we did our predictions for the Big Six. So we did the Fat Guy Six this time, which was Best Actors, Actor, Supporting Actor and Actress, Director and Picture for the Oscars that are this weekend on ABC. But now we're back, and what's it time for now?
It's time for the world famous DVD roundup.
That's right. You actually have one. I'm going to let you start because you have one.
Oh yes,
throw that out to you.
Coming out this week is Puss in Boots, starring Antonio Banderas and Salma Hayek, bridging off of the popular Shrek series. Puss in Boots finds our hero, Puss in Boots, on the search for a set of magic beads, as he was working with his friend Humpty Dumpty.
Humpty Alexander Dumpty.
Yeah, yes, played by Zach Galifianakis. Wow, yeah. That's a hard one. And I really liked this film. I thought it was really cute. The dance sequences were kind of nice. And it's nice to see like Puss on his own. It's amazing what they can do with the whole fairy tale universe outside of Shrek. I didn't think that there was much that they could do outside of it.
Uh-huh.
But I was surprised at some of the elements that they had here. I think it'll be pretty fun for kids and everyone to see.
I really liked Puss in Boots, and one of the things I thought was so neat about this movie was, like you said, they were able to do it in the Shrek universe, but they weren't burdened by Shrek. It was better than the last two Shrek movies, and yeah, it's a cute movie. And it was funny. My favorite character in the entire movie, Ooh Cat.
Oh, I love it. Ooh.
If you haven't seen it, go watch it. You'll totally get it.
I love that.
The other movies that we got this week, we've got Tower Heist, which is Brett Ratner's film about sort of the Occupy movement to a certain degree after a Bernie Madoff type who smuggled who embezzled money.
Okay,
I actually like that. I mean, Brett Ratner is a hack director, but it's a fun movie. I thought Ben Stiller and Eddie Murphy and Casey Affleck and Michael Peña all had pretty good chemistry with what they were doing. There's also J. Edgar, which is Clint Eastwood's J. Edgar Hoover biopic.
Right. I always kind of get the feeling that DiCaprio's kind of fighting to get visual, you know, Oscar visuals.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with any Eastwood picture is Oscar bait.
Okay.
You know, so, and he gets him in there. And I mean, he does a good job in it. It's just that Eastwood, he has these blips of really good directing. And all of his movies are well made, but they're not always gripping. I guess is the best way to say J. Edgar. But you can check that one out. There's also Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, which stars Elizabeth Olsen as a woman who has escaped from a cult and is sort of having some psychological issues trying to get away from all that.
Okay.
That's a good movie. It's a thriller, but it's a very unconventional thriller. So definitely worth checking out. There's also The Way.
That was Martin Sheen?
Martin Sheen, yeah.
Right, directed by Emilio Estevez, I think.
That's right, his son.
Right.
Charlie Sheen is nowhere near this movie. I'm just letting people know.
Thank God.
It would have been great, because the whole thing is, the story is Martin Sheen plays an ophthalmologist whose son is trying to be an anthropologist, and he dies while on a pilgrimage in Spain, I think. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to collect his son's body, and he decides to make the pilgrimage himself. For a journey, and it's him along the way, and so he keeps having these visions of his son along the way periodically to show that his son's with him and he's carrying his ashes, and it gets dull at times. It runs a little bit too long, but there are some very sweet moments and some very tender moments and genuine moments. Although I wish at some point instead of seeing Emilio Estevez, he would have seen Charlie Sheen like drinking tiger blood and being like, winning
all sorts of winning. Yeah. Oh God.
The other one is Underdog, the complete series. Is
wait, the cartoon Underdog?
Yeah. The original. Oh my God. Yeah, that's the original's on complete series on DVD set. So that's something to check out.
Yeah.
And then the stinker of the week is Honey 2.
What?
It's the sequel to Jessica Alba's Honey. It stars Katarina Graham. She plays the witch in The Vampire Diaries. Okay. And she's beautiful. She's a gorgeous girl. And it's nice to see her dancing around in tight little outfits and sports bras and stuff.
Okay, that's promising.
It's a bad movie. It doesn't have the integrity and quality of character that the Step Up movies have.
God, when did Honey? Well, okay, I gotta admit, I do watch the Step Up movies.
Step Up movies are cool.
I am ashamed of it, Tatum and all, but I have seen like every one of those and that and Stomp the Yard and all those other dance movies.
Yeah,
I wouldn't see myself seeing this, but I don't know if it comes on cable, I might catch it, but.
I wouldn't seek it out. It's one of those movies because it has like the evil dance crew or the bad
dance
crew.
It always is the evil dance crew. There's always some.
It's as ludicrous as the evil tornado chasers in Twister.
Nice. Oh my God. We just want to watch Breakin'.
Breakin' or Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh yeah.
Which is in fact where Electric Boogaloo came from for everybody who makes those jokes now.
That is nice.
Anyways, we got to wrap this up. We got about 30 seconds left. Act of Valor gets a kind of rocks. Gone, Tyler Perry's Good Deeds, and Wanderlust get preemptive sucks. Next week, we're going to have The Lorax and Project X, and I will actually see all those movies next week. We got 15 seconds. Leonard, tell us where to find you and let everybody know what's going on.
Yes, I can be found at Through the Shattered Lens. That's unobtainium13.com. I can also be found as Cavatica. That's CAVATICA on Twitter.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. It's great to have you. We got to go.
Happy to be here. Thank you.